Hello, everyone, and welcome to another brilliant Sport and Lifestyle Biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. This week, we've got some brand new material from 14-year-old golfing sensation Molly Campbell. We've also got part one from John Hathaway, MMA fighter, and USA and Olympic reign footballer Sam Hyatt. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup, and we know you're just going to love the show. Joining me this week is one of our favourite guests. She's young star golfer. It's Molly Campbell. Hi, Molly. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really, really well, thank you. Appreciate you doing this for us. Just tell us quickly where you're off to today.
I'm off to Cleckheaton Golf Course, play in a Rotherham Scratch match.
Wow, okay. Something exciting. Have you played the course before?
Yeah.
Good. And it's a course that you like?
It's all right.
It's all right. Okay, no, that's good. Good luck with that. I just want to just catch up with you, really, since we last spoke. You know, let us know how your 2023 is going. A couple of things that are nice to talk about. So, yeah, just tell us how things are going with the game at the moment and how you feel 2023 has gone so far for you.
Yeah, it's gone well so far. It's been a good start to the season. I feel like I'm playing well and a few big comps coming up. So, it'll be interesting to see how they go.
Yeah, and you played in a couple of decent competitions as well recently.
Yeah, so I've just come back from Northern County Week, which finished yesterday.
Yeah.
So I played for Yorkshire and we ended up winning.
That's fair. How does that work? How many players in a team? What sort of competition is it?
So there's 9 players in a team. 7 players play per day.
Yeah.
So there's 3 single matches per match and then there's 2 fours matches. So on Monday,
yeah,
in the morning, we played against Cumbria. So I played in a forces match and me and my partner won.
Lovely.
And then we won 5-0 against Cumbria.
Yeah.
Then we played Northumberland in the afternoon. Again, same format, 3 singles, 2 foursomes. We won again 5-0. So we were basically 10-0, all matches won. And I think we were leading by 3 points going into the second day.
Yeah.
So in the morning we had Cheshire and Durham in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And we beat both of them. Same score for both. And then on the last day we played against Lancashire. We won 3.5, 1.5. We ended up winning.
Brilliant. It's just like a league basis, was it? So whoever got the most points over all the matches, there was no like knockouts at the end. It was just you played each other once and the top scorers won.
Yeah.
Fabulous. And you guys won every match as well. I mean, that's pretty convincing.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Great that you're playing for Yorkshire. I understand congratulations are in order about your handicap. You've reached a milestone, actually gone past it. And I just want you to let us know what your feelings are now you've got there and whether this achievement's actually ahead of what your own personal schedule was.
Well, yes. So I'm now playing off plus 0.1, which is officially plus. It's not a lot, but it's still plus. So yeah. I set myself the target to be playing off at least scratch, if not better.
Yeah.
Which I basically completed before the season's really got started.
Yeah.
So that's good, and we've had to basically set another target to get even lower now.
Wow. That's just amazing. You know, I mean, for most people like myself, who, well, we're nowhere near the standard that you are, you know, even dreaming of getting anywhere near scratch, you don't even think about going plus. The fact you've gone plus already is just amazing. Absolutely fantastic. So you've obviously been hitting quite a few rounds sort of under par to get to that level.
Yeah, I've had a couple of under pars at Hollingwell and a few like levels, one overs here and there, which have helped. So I'm playing good golf, good steady golf.
Yeah.
Which I'm really confident in my game at the minute.
That's brilliant. So I remember when we spoke on a couple of occasions last year, you were having growth spurts, you were having a couple of issues with your knee, and even though you were still playing brilliant to the normal eye, you were not quite 100% happy in yourself. So you feel it's all come together now?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
Brilliant. And you're hitting the ball further off the tee now as well?
Yeah, I've recently got a new driver, because my old driver, I was striking it really well, but I was getting way too much spin.
Okay.
So as soon as the ball basically hits the ground, it's coming in so high that even with burnt out ground like now,
yeah,
it's not really running. So I've got a new driver, which is coming out at a much better flight. So I'm carrying it further, and obviously it's running out further.
That's fabulous. And just for a lot of the people that have an interest but aren't really sort of what you'd say technically educated in golf, the further you hit it, obviously it gives you an advantage because you can go in with a shorter iron, which I presume helps with holding the ball near the pin. Any other good points about that, or is that the main thing?
That's probably the main thing, to be honest.
Good and fabulous. Even that long time ago that I saw you play, you've always been good around the green. So, I mean, obviously, that's been a massive help to your game as well.
Yeah.
Also, something else that we briefly touched on last time was that you're now selected for the under-18 regional England team, which at your age is amazing. Tell us about the camps that you have with them and what the relative age is compared to yours with the rest of the squad members.
Well, it's more of a coaching squad, once every month or so.
Yeah.
Sometimes even twice. We all like meet up and do like coaching and stuff. So, yeah, it's just a team sort of where all eight of us do coaching together.
And do you actually get to play any matches against others, or is it just, as you said, just more coaching and getting you guys ready for when you're 18?
It's just really coaching, to be honest.
It's good though. Level's very good, and you know, you can obviously tell the difference.
Yeah.
Fabulous, fabulous. So, yeah, you're obviously onto that competition today, Molly. Tell us about the bigger competitions you've got coming up soon.
I've got the English girls under-18s and English girls under-16s. They're the next two that are coming up. I've got Scottish girls under-16s after that, which is at, like, the start of the summer holidays. And then I've also got Midlands under-21s.
Wow. So they're all actually coming up quite soon. Tell us, whereabouts are they? What course are they held at?
I'm not really sure on the Scotland one, okay, to be honest, because that's more of a recent thing that we've booked into.
Right, okay.
The under-18s is at Effingham, and the under-16s is at Sheffingham.
Okay.
And then the Midlands under-21s is at Stoke Rochford.
Okay. Have you played any of those courses before?
No.
Okay, so you'll go down there, what, day before, have a practice round?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got quite a lot to get yourself ready for. You're obviously happy with your game. It sounds all exciting and things are progressing nicely for you. Does that mean any different for you going back to your handicap, you being obviously under scratch effectively? Does that mean you actually qualify for bigger tournaments or more tournaments, or does it really not have much difference?
It doesn't really have much difference at the minute because, like, all the competitions which go based off ballots where the competition's full, so the lowest handicaps get in.
Yeah.
And more for, like, your under-25s and stuff, which we're not going to do this year.
Okay, well, that's good, Molly. I mean, the game's brilliant. I'm so happy that you're going forward. You're obviously progressing in your golf, hitting the ball further. Sounds, in conversations with your dad, your knee's not as bad. You're playing through it, which is a good thing to do. I know you're still having looks at that, so hopefully that's all good for you. One thing that's quite controversial in golf that I wanted to just ask you about from a young player's point of view is PIF and LIV, which gets a lot of traction on social media. There's a lot of bad feelings between both tours, although they've now decided to merge. What's your feeling on LIV and the payments to golfers, if you have any feeling on that? Huge money just to go and play less golf. What's your feelings on that?
Well, to be honest, it was going to happen at some point. When Brooks won the major,
yeah,
it was going to happen because all the press surrounding it, it still showed that these players were still relevant, and it showed even at the weekend gone that, like, the players are still going to come back for all the majors and they're there for a winning chance. So it was going to happen eventually, and there's positives and negatives to it, but you have to look at the other elements of it. And ladies golf, it's going to bring a lot more money into ladies golf. It'll be interesting to see how it will affect the tour schedule for ladies and the purse for ladies competitions as well.
Yeah, so there's rumours of it's actually filtering into the ladies game as well, because that was going to be one of my questions to you, because at the moment obviously it's just the men. Is there something similar going to happen, or is it just that money's going to filter through now that they've merged?
Well, it'll probably be something similar because the LPGA and the PGA, they're still connected.
Yeah.
So it would be very, very strange if the LPGA didn't also come into the factor of it, because LIV have all their ladies competitions as well. So LIV can't just abandon all of their ladies.
Right, okay. And that does make sense. It's just nice to know. Golf, to be fair, money's quite good at the top, I think, for even on the ladies' game. But it's nice to know that they're actually getting some of that. The ladies are sort of getting taken care of as well.
Yeah.
Well, Molly, I just want to say, I'll let you get on your way. I know you want to get in the right mindset. I just want to say thank you so much for chatting to me today. We'll definitely catch up. Good luck today, and we'll speak very soon.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Molly.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, this week I'm joined by a very special person. New to us for this show regarding sport. He's a UFC fighter. It's John the Hitman Hathaway. John, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me on.
No problem. Absolute pleasure. And thank you for joining us and giving us your time. It's really appreciated and definitely a sport that I enjoy. Not quite your normal sport because it's very, very combat, obviously, and dangerous. But yeah, really looking forward to chatting to you about it. So thank you.
Pleasure. You know, obviously, been a big fan of combat sports. I think I started kind of watching, I guess, combat sports, I mean, boxing as a particular when I was young, but obviously going to UFC probably around the age of 15.
Yeah.
And then managed to get my first kind of two professional fights while I was 18, so before I turned 19. And I've kind of never looked back, really. I just enjoy kind of every aspect of the combat sports.
Brilliant. I mean, that's amazing. Absolutely fabulous and interesting, which we'll come on to, obviously. But if you don't mind, if we could just go back to a little bit earlier, just so the listeners get to know you a little bit more. Growing up, what sports were your number one? And was UFC, combat or boxing your first? Or was it something different?
Me, it was always rugby. I mean, I played rugby from a young age. I've got two older brothers who also played rugby.
Okay.
They still play rugby for the local club. And probably when I stopped competing, I joined them, and I've joined them plenty of times actually during kind of like or in between competitions. So it's always good to kind of have a run out with like the old club, and again, a lot of my old friends still kind of play for it. So it's kind of always nice to play for a team sport as well. Combat sports always being generally as much you train in a team, an individual sport when you're out there.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fabulous. The team environment, it's slightly different, isn't it? Because you're playing for your mates, as it were, as well, rather than just yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you win or lose, you're all in kind of together, and again, you can all enjoy it afterwards together as well, which is always nice.
Yeah, brilliant. And it sounds like a family sport.
I'm sorry, I mean, my dad actually played football and did some boxing when he was younger, but he never kind of got fired in the combat sports. But I don't know why his brother picked rugby, but he started and liked it, and obviously being a young brother, me and my other brother just followed him into it, and obviously enjoyed it immensely since.
And that is sort of combat, isn't it? Even though it's compared to football, it's classed a gentleman's game as in respect to the officials and things like that. It's very much a combat sport. It's very tough rugby.
Almost certainly. I think it gets you used to kind of every aspect of what a combat sport brings, you know, just in the bumps and bruises and the kind of multi-dynamicness of it, the fact that you're never running in a straight line, you always have to change directions, you have to take impacts from different sides and set yourself in good positions to be able to make impacts.
Yeah, you're right. And so obviously you were used to the bumps and the scrapes, as it were, obviously in a totally different aspect. Most of them in rugby would be just contact and accidental contact most of the time, we'll say. But obviously mixed martial arts, UFC, is very, very different. What was it that really drew you to it? Was it seeing it on television? What was it?
Yeah, I saw it on television. It used to be played on Sky Sports, and it was just kind of a mixed show, so it wasn't a full show. It was just different matches from different shows, what they had. And I always just like competition, really, and I just saw it and thought that this looked amazing. You know, obviously I was a Bruce Lee and kind of like kung fu movies from at that age.
Yeah,
I just kind of didn't look back. You know, I think I started by, it was a different era, I guess, back then. You didn't really have the internet, you couldn't really check these things out. So I remember buying kind of like black belt or like martial arts magazines, basically, and just kind of like finding stuff from there, really.
Oh yeah, and you're right, it's totally different now, isn't it? It's a click of a button and you can see pretty much anything you want to. So obviously the intrigue perhaps was there. What inspired the change from rugby? Was it just something you thought, yeah, I want to have a go at that, or was there something else?
Not so much. I mean, I kind of like started to do it, I think, from the age of 15. I mean, initially from these kind of like black belt magazines, I got some VHSs of like kind of some combat people doing kind of pancrase or mixed martial arts. Started watching them. There wasn't really any gyms around at the time in the area, so I started doing it with my rugby friends. I mean, it's always the handy of the rugby team was having 15 plus other guys who are athletic and into kind of like contact sports.
Right, yeah.
Taught them. So then I had people to do it with. And then eventually kind of found a local club, I think when I was about 17, and started going down there. But I mean, for me, I still played rugby into my 20s.
Right, okay.
For the local team. I got into the adult team for the first team. I mean, I think around the age of 18, I kind of made a bad decision that I was going to go down the combat route rather than the rugby route. Had my trials down at Bristol Academy to get into their academy for rugby. And basically, it was around the age or around the time when rugby players just started getting ridiculously big. And I'm fairly big. I'm 6'2". You know, I walk around at probably like 84, 85 kilos. Right. But the guys were just getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of was at a push that I have to try to put a lot of weight on or kind of start getting out. And obviously, with the mixed martial arts, what I wanted to get into, obviously it's done by weight classes, so I didn't want to put in too much weight because I wanted to fight obviously in a fairly more natural weight class rather than a higher up one, because yep. I thought my height was quite good for the kind of welterweight division, and basically kind of made my decision from there. Obviously I could have gone down Bristol and stuff like that, but I didn't want to leave my friends who were group and people who I knew in kind of the Brighton area, so I basically made this choice then that I'd stay. Obviously I carried on playing rugby and started getting my kind of like early professional fights in.
Yeah.
And just finding my feet in combat sports.
Wonderful. And we'll move on to that now, obviously, which is what you're doing at the moment. You've got an impressive record. You've had about 20 fights, 18 wins. One thing that I did notice when I was looking at that is that you've got 5 by KO and 4 by submission, which, from my very inexperienced knowledge, is quite rare. Normally you're either one or the other. Is that correct? Or is it changing and you get people that are just good at everything now?
I think nowadays, definitely everyone's good at everything. Obviously, a lot of people, when I started, came from a particular thing. So they were either a stand-up guy who was KOing people or a ground guy who was submitting people. So I was kind of, I guess, one of the first generations of people who started doing mixed martial arts as like its own sport. So being able to do both kind of thing. But obviously, nowadays, it's very different people. There is a whole mixed martial arts gym. So I thought you would have to go to a boxing gym or a grappling gym. Or,
yeah.
I mean, there wasn't even that many of them. But you would start kind of picking up rather than it's far more diverse now. A lot of people do everything at every gym. So it's more common nowadays. But I mean, it was fairly uncommon, I guess, back in the day. Or less common, so to say.
Yeah. So it's probably a bit like most sports, really. They do all evolve. If you look at football, there's people that can do defending and attacking now, rather than just the one. And I suppose cricket, I know it's a totally different sport to what you do, but people that just use you either bat or ones that just use to bowl, and now there's people that do all of it. You know, I suppose it's like all sports are evolving. So without sounding obvious, does that make your job trickier? Because you effectively have to plan for everything rather than just defending a stand-up KO-er, as you said, or someone that's on the ground that's trying to get you into submission.
Almost. Certainly. I mean, but that's part of the joy in the sport and in competing, is just the fact that you've got to worry about everything now. So there's so much more to kind of like deal with. But again, obviously it makes it harder, but it makes it a lot more enjoyable. And again, you always just got to kind of play to your strengths or what you think your strengths are in that match and work towards doing them.
Yeah, worry about yourself and let them deal with you, sort of thing.
Oh, most certainly. I think it's a far better way of doing it, right? Because you can always get caught up in what the other team or the other person can do.
Yeah.
And then not slightly maybe neutralising what they do, but not end up doing what you do best.
So that's a really good point for people to know. In all sports, again, you do have to worry and plan for your opposition. But I always find coaching football that I'd rather be attacking and get them to worry about us without being too risky, if that makes sense. You know, you've got to defend your line, but making the other team worry about you.
Almost certainly. I think one of the greatest lines I've ever heard with kind of things like this, or at least the thought process that I always like to think of, is you've got to want to win. You just can't not want to lose. Not wanting to lose isn't good enough. It's not the same as wanting to win. You know, I can plan from like seeing what he's going to do and just try not to let him do it, which is not me trying to win. It's just me trying not to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with that. So you made your MMA debut, John, on the 25th of June, 2006. You won by rear naked choke, which sounds complicated. Just tell us, you know, first of all, about when you stepped inside to the cage on your first fight and how you actually felt. And B, rear naked choke, how difficult is it to pull that off?
It's not overly difficult, obviously, that you have to be behind someone, so it's a choke, it's a strangle from behind. I mean, for me, I never really get too nervous of what I'm doing. It's something that I've done lots of times in the build-up to a competition. You kind of go for every kind of scenario and rehearsal almost. So by the time you get on, say, the stage, it'll be the same for a theatre performance first time. I mean, you may get a little nervous or apprehensive in the build-up to it. But by the time you're doing it, you've done it so many times that it is just second nature. You know, same for football players or any type of kind of like person who needs to perform, that repetition is kind of what gets you in. And then by the time you get up, you're kind of meant to be there. It's what you're naturally doing. So I mean, for my first match, it really was, I mean, I was fighting someone who was a fair bit shorter than me, but he was kind of, came from my bodybuilding background and kind of looked incredible and must have been very strong. But obviously I quickly got a takedown, got on top, started putting pressure on him. He rolled over, which enabled me to take his back and put the choke in. I put the strangler.
UK Health Radio. Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, joining me this week is a superstar lady. She's a professional footballer and she plays for OL Reign in America. It's Sam Hyatt. Hi, Sam. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. How are you?
Really well, thank you. Appreciate you giving your time up for us. Early morning for you, just coming to sort of early evening for us. So amazing we can connect. We want to talk, obviously, about your career and what your plans are for the future and how you got into football. But if I could wind it back to start off with, please, just so people get to know you a bit better. You were born in Washington. Who or what were your inspirations initially to get into football?
So I'm actually pretty lucky. Both of my parents played soccer in college. So especially for me, my mom was definitely a role model and an inspiration, someone who I looked up to. I was actually able to watch some of her games when she was older, playing in an adult league here in Washington. And so I think because of that, that got me into soccer at an early age. And also as a result of my parents playing soccer, you know, I was learning about the 99 U.S. Women's National Team. My mom played with Brandi Chastain. So some of those players' names, you know, Mia Hamm, Christine Lilly, Julie Foudy were names in our household. So I think I just grew up around the game, and it was definitely something that I was introduced to at a young age and just completely fell in love with it. So here I am, you know, 20 something years later, still playing and still enjoying it.
That's amazing. That's absolutely fabulous. You know, great that you were into it straight away. Great you had a pathway shown by your parents, which is fabulous. What were the opportunities like for girls where you were at that time?
Yeah, so I think I probably did the typical route for a young girl soccer player here in Washington. I played club soccer up until I was 11 or 12, and then the ECNL League started up here in the U.S., and I think that was a great opportunity because through the ECNL, we traveled a lot. We were able to be seen by a lot of different college coaches across the country, and so I think that played an important part of my recruiting process and ultimately helped me get into college and be seen by the colleges that I wanted to play at. And I think I was lucky again in that there was a pretty good structure here in Washington where I grew up, where there was a pathway or a track where I could follow and kind of, you know, check all the right boxes that I needed to get to playing in college, which ultimately, you know, is a big goal for a lot of young girls in the country, but also an important stepping stone, especially at least for me, in order to play professionally.
Yeah, college is huge. And we will come on to college, actually, because you've done fantastically well. But moving through your prep school years, you played for Seattle Preparatory School for 4 years. You were captain. How important and sort of memorable was that experience for you at that time in preparation for the career you had ahead?
Yeah, my high school soccer experience was great. I can't speak for all high school teams because I know the level varies, but mine was actually really good. I was lucky to have a lot of players who actually would go on to play collegiately on my team, so the level was pretty high. I think it was high school soccer really highlighted part of my career that was really just fun playing. I think I really enjoyed playing for my school. It was kind of different, you know, up until that point as a teenager, you've only ever played for your club team, but it was fun to be able to play and represent my school. And at the same time, while I was, you know, like I said, having a lot of fun, we also wanted to be a winning team. We wanted to win state. And I think that's something that has kind of been a goal of mine at every level I've played at. I've always wanted to be part of either establishing or being a part of a winning culture and just having really high standards. So while it was fun playing high school soccer and representing the school, I think at the same time, I still tried to maintain the standards that I would have on, you know, any team I was playing on at the time.
No, I mean, amazing. And yeah, great that you've done so well and you could see sort of how it would prepare you for the future. And towards the end of those school years, you received a couple of awards. In 2015, you were the Washington State Gatorade Player of the Year and in the Best 11 of High School All-American. And then the following year, 2016, you were the Seattle Preparatory Athlete of the Year. A couple of fantastic achievements. What did they mean to you? And did you use that as confidence going forward? Or was it just something nice to be honoured with?
Well, I think the individual accolades were great, and I'm so grateful for those. But at the same time, I think what was most important to me was I just wanted to help our team do the best that we could. So putting my high school name on those was more important recognition, I would say, than just doing it for myself. And ultimately, my goal during those years was, like I said, we wanted to win state, we wanted to win our league. And so I was playing and working more towards that. So I guess I would say they're nice to have, but I think the things I'm proudest of during that time were the championships and what our team achieved together. And then I think in terms of confidence, I'm not sure how much those awards played into building my confidence. Like I said, I think it was more just something nice to have at the time. I also had just started playing with the U.S. youth national team around that same time. So I think I needed to have confidence for that. And I think I got confidence through those camps as well, maybe more so than from the high school level. But like I said, I think I achieved a lot during that time with my school, and I'm really mostly proud of what I achieved with my teammates there.
Fantastic. Again, just showing your team ethic as well, which is important, isn't it? I mean, football is a team game. Sometimes you have to be, when I say selfish, I don't mean selfish, but you have to focus on your game as well. But it's nice when a whole team comes together.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think I've been fortunate in that the teams that I've been on have all had a similar theme of everyone, you know, again, having a standard of excellence and wanting to be the best. And so surrounding yourself with a culture like that really is the best way to improve going forward.
Absolutely. Perfect way of explaining it. Super. This success, achievement, was continued throughout your collegiate years, which we touched on before. You attended Stanford, a D1 team, obviously, amazing, well-known university, and you played for them. You were three-time All-Pac 12 winner and a two-time All-American. I mean, they're just amazing achievements and a way of being recognised. It must have made you extremely proud and really given you that boost.
Yeah, my time at Stanford was so special for a wide variety of reasons. My teammates at that time were absolutely incredible. And today, actually, they're, you know, some of the best in the world. I was lucky enough to be playing with Katarina Macario, Sophia Smith, Naomi Girma. And so I really was honored to play on that team during that time. And every single year, our goal was to win a national championship. We came into preseason and we would talk about it, and we just knew. Every single person in that locker room knew that was our goal. That was what we were striving for. And so everything we did, starting when we all reported on the 1st of August or whenever it was, everything we did was geared towards that. And so to have that mentality and be surrounded by people who had the same goals as you was really an incredible experience. And the fact that we were able to win two national championships during that time and go to three Final Fours was just amazing, and it's something I'm so grateful for. And honestly, I think as much as I enjoyed my time playing at Stanford with the wins and the teams I was on, I also think it prepared me so well for the NWSL, because again, those things I mentioned, being in a super competitive environment and having to play against some of the best players in the world, that really set me up for success, or set me up the best it could for the jump to the next level. Because obviously here again, you're playing against some of the best players in the world. The training environment is really difficult in the best way. I'm challenged every single day. And so I'm forever grateful that my time at Stanford really prepared me for this next level. And the training environment there was fantastic.
Sam, thank you for that. You said the training at Stanford helped you again leap forward. Was it totally different from what you'd experienced elsewhere in training?
I would say it was definitely different than like the jump from my club team to Stanford. I would just say at Stanford, the standards were just so high. Like, we really did have standards of excellence, and we wanted to try and do our best and be the best every single day. And I would say, yeah, I think it was maybe not new. Like, the idea, the concept of that wasn't new, but I just think the standards were even higher. So everyone really held themselves and the people around them more, or held them accountable to the level that we all wanted to achieve. And I think that was maybe the first time I'd been on a team where it had permeated throughout the entire team that these exceptionally high standards were the ones that we had set for ourselves. And that was what we set out to do. And that's what we were going to do.
brilliant and just how it should be. But it's really nice just to hear that. But even though it's college, not professional, it's such a big deal at Stanford that it is like a professional setup. Amazing to hear. And then you joined OL Reign in 2019, huge club, and were selected by them in the third round of the draft. Did you again notice the difference between their standard and Stanford, or was Stanford at such a high level it was just seamless to transfer into OL Reign's way of doing?
Yeah, that's what I think is so wild, I guess, about becoming a professional player, because I absolutely noticed a difference. And at the same time, I think Stanford was the best environment that I could have possibly had in college to try and prepare me. And so I think my time there prepared me the best it could. But at the same time, the jump to the NWSL was definitely a challenge. I think even just for any normal player coming out of college, it can be difficult. And at the same time, I had actually had a major hip surgery right after my last season at Stanford before I started playing professionally. So on top of, you know, coming from the college level, I was also trying to just work my way back into soccer in general. But yeah, I think the biggest difference for me in terms of comparing college and the professional level is just the speed of play. And when I say that, it's the actual speed of, like, the players are moving faster, the balls are moving faster, you have to think faster, your touches have to be cleaner because you have less time, you need to be able to play better with both feet because, again, you have less time.
Yeah.
And all of that is kind of just dealing, again, with the ridiculous speed of play that's so fast, even compared to one of, you know, the best college programs I could have been in. And so I think while it was definitely a challenge in the beginning, I can tell I've grown so much from, like, my first couple games in the league till now. And I think, you know, every preceding game, it gets a little bit easier or you get a little more used to the speed of play. But it's also like, I think I'm such a better player because of having to be in this environment where I'm forced to think and play quicker and faster. Yes. So I've been learning a lot, but the jump from college to the pro level definitely, I think, helped with that.
Wow. Amazing. Again, that you've talked so highly about Stanford, yet I know OL Reign is the team to look at. It was another massive step up. So great that you took that so easily in your stride. You started with a 2-0 win, which is obviously nice. However, that was during COVID, which I think for everybody was a strange experience. Were you playing behind closed doors? And if you were, what was that experience like?
Yeah, so like I said, my COVID experience even was a little more unique, maybe a little different than even the typical, you know, US pro player experience, because that was during the time that I was still rehabbing from my surgery. So the whole world shut down and I'm in the middle of my rehab post-surgery. I'm flying home. I don't have my tee anymore. I have to find somewhere with, you know, an Ultra G, the special treadmill that you can run on when you're coming back from an injury. So it was all these factors of just trying to figure out how I was going to continue my rehab for those first couple months. And then when we finally did play again in the, for me at least, in the fall of 2020, I think there was decreased amount of fans allowed or something like that. Maybe no fans, people like family only, or people could watch it online. And it definitely was a strange experience playing without fans. It's a lot quieter.
Yeah, I bet it was actually. You can hear everything. I remember watching a few matches of the Premier League on the television and you can hear everything. It's almost like watching a game on a park, isn't it? You know, because there's no crowd, there's no singing, there's no atmosphere, it's just silence and you can hear what everybody says. So a real strange experience and probably something you'll never actually have a true opinion on unless you're actually a part of it. Yeah, thank you for that and giving us that insight. Well, obviously COVID was strange as well because of training. You know, you had bubbles. Sometimes you couldn't even go in. How did you keep yourself mentally and physically strong during such a difficult period for everybody?
Yeah, I think everyone will say that, you know, COVID presented some challenges mentally and physically, whether that was, you know, trying to find a training environment when teams weren't going or just trying to continue and be mentally ready when we weren't really sure when we're going to play or what the training situation going to look like. How are we going to have a season if we can't even travel right now? And I think just for me, the people I surrounded myself with. I think I had a good support system and I was able to, you know, make it through that. I think it also helped having friends and teammates across the country who were kind of going through a similar thing, so we could talk about it together and kind of see what other people were doing to cope or things that were helping. And so I think just continuing to train and do as much as I could and try and retain some sense of normalcy was helpful to me, while also, you know, like I said, talking with other people and knowing that it may have been a difficult time, but, you know, I wasn't the only one going through it. And there were other people I could talk to and count on as well to help get me through that.
No, and that's wonderful. And I presume you've got training plans and Zoom meetings with your team.
Yeah, we kept going with, I think there was like individual trainings for a little bit there, and then, yeah, Zoom meetings and things like that.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, in 2022, you were back playing properly. You started all 19 games for OL Reign, played in a staggering 1,710 minutes in a good season. How good was it to be an ever-present in such a good team?
I mean, it was great. I'm so appreciative that I'm able to play that much on such an amazing team and just contribute what I can to our team's success. We won the Shield last year, but fell short of our ultimate goal of winning a championship. So while I look back on the season overall, there were some good moments and there are things that I'm proud of. At the same time, it was a disappointing end. So still a little bit of a bitter taste, I would say, thinking back on how it ended. But I just know that all those minutes have helped me grow. And even from the beginning of that season to the end of that season until now, I know I'm a better player and I've learned so much. And so every time I play, like I said, I'm just trying to do the best I can for my team and continue to keep learning and growing as well.
Brilliant. Thank you. Fabulous to hear. So we'll just move on quickly before we wrap up today and we'll talk about internationals. On the international scene, you've represented your country under 18, under 20 level. What was it like when you first received that call up and then your first cap and pulling that kit on?
I mean, as someone who grew up, you know, hearing about the national team, watching the national team and just looking up to those amazing women, it was incredible. I still remember getting told I was going to my first national team. I still remember putting the jersey on for the first time. And, you know, it was amazing. It was such an incredible feeling to be able to try and represent my country and just, again, follow in the footsteps of the amazing and, you know, role models and powerful women who had come through the team before me. So to even just be a part of the youth national team level for the U.S. was such an honor, and it's always an honor every single time.
Just what I expect to hear, you know, for someone like you can read your resume, or as I'm doing, I'm talking to you, can just feel your passion, your commitment to the game. And it's just nice that everything that you've achieved, the next thing is still special, if that makes sense. You seem like you take nothing for granted at all.
For sure. I mean, like I said, I've been fortunate to be a part of some amazing teams, and I definitely take what I've learned from each one of them with me, but I'm always continuing to try and do my best and win with whatever team I'm on at the time.
Yeah, no, perfect. And if I could just throw a quick question in there about your playing position. I often ask the younger girls this because it's more to help with development, but what is your best position and what is your favorite position? Growing up, it's surprising how often they're different, if that makes sense.
For sure. I think my best position right now is center back, and I think that's also my favorite position right now, probably partially because it's my best position, I think, right now for me. Yeah. Because this is the position where I think I'm best suited to contribute and help the team. And so I think that plays a role in how much I enjoy it. But I definitely think growing up that it's not always the same. It's not always the position that you like the most is not always where you end up as a young soccer player. But I think for me, I have really spent most of my career in this position. I played a little bit of center mid as well, which it honestly contributed to my growth overall, and it helped me become a better center back the time I spent in the midfield. But for right now, yeah, center back is where I think I'm best and also the one I enjoy the most. So.
Brilliant. It's interesting to hear that as well from your side, you know, as you are a professional and as you've already found your best position and your favourite one, as we said. So yeah, just a couple of more things then, Sam, if that's okay. What's your plans and dreams for the future?
Yeah, so for as of right now, my plan is to keep playing here in the NWSL and, you know, hopefully keep playing here with the Reign. I want to keep getting better on an individual level, just keep improving and growing and learning here. But also, as I mentioned, we fell short of our ultimate goal last year of winning a championship. And so my goal is to do whatever I can and whatever I need to do to contribute to this team, you know, winning a championship. So that's definitely a goal of mine and a goal of ours here at the Reign.
Perfect. And then finally, please can you offer some advice and tips for any young players, especially girls, who are looking to have a career in football, whether it's things you need to sacrifice or even if you get a knockback, how you get back on the horse, as it were?
I would say, I guess, two things come to mind if I would say to young girls. I would say, first and foremost, I would make sure that you're, you know, having fun playing. And that sounds so basic, but at the same time, looking back on where I started and where I am now, it is a lot of hard work to play soccer or play football and reach the professional level. And I think that if you are truly enjoying yourself, I think that helps and that goes hand in hand with achieving success, because I think if you're enjoying it and if you're having fun and it's worth it to you deep down, then I think that will help get you through the moments where, you know, maybe it's not so fun. Maybe you don't want to get up out of bed to go do some fitness, or maybe, you know, if you have an injury and you're struggling to make it back on the field, I think remembering why you're doing it all and thinking big picture, like, I love to play this sport and I have fun doing it, I think that will help in the long run. And then I would say one thing, maybe just technically or tactically, to think about is to try and put yourself in the best training environment that you can. I definitely learned that lesson growing up, trying to find, you know, the best training environment for myself, you know, whatever that may look like, whether it's playing up or playing with boys or just playing on a certain team that is going to help you grow. I think that the training environment you surround yourself in or surround yourself with ultimately is what really helps you become the player and grow and learn. And so I think just being thoughtful about the training environment you're creating for yourself is important. And again, that's something I kind of learned but can look back and say I would love to be able to tell any young girl that who's starting out and wants to become a pro.
Well, Sam, what a lovely way to finish it. Perfect advice, good positive advice, and I just want to say thank you for today. I'd love to catch up with you again in a few weeks. For today, I just want to say Sam Hyatt, all the way from OL Reign, thank you very much.
Sounds good to me. And again, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks, Sam.
Have a good one.
We finish off this week's show with our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, tennis, motorsport and football. We start with golf. The PGA Tour held the John Deere Classic from the TPC Deer Run in Illinois, and it was won by Sepp Straka on minus 21. Two shots clear of tied second Brendan Todd and Alex Smalley. This week it's the Barbasol Championship from the Keen Trace Golf Club in Kentucky. The DP World Tour hosted the Made in Denmark from the Himmerland Golf and Spa Resort, and it was won by hometown boy Rasmus Højgaard. His first win for a while, he beat Nacho Oliveira after they both finished on 13 under par on unbelievably the sixth playoff hole. Tied third was Kalle Samuja, Alexander Bjork and Mark Warren. This week they also have the Barbasol Championship from Kentucky, where they joint host it with the PGA Tour. The LPGA hosted another major, the US Open, from the Pebble Beach Golf Links in California, and it was won. A first LPGA Tour victory and major victory for Alison Corpus. She won on minus 9, three shots clear of British star Charlie Hull and J.A. Shin. This week it's the Greater Toledo LPGA Classic from the Highland Meadows Golf Club in Ohio. Horse racing. The big races of the weekend were the Coral Eclipse. We did say to you it would be a match if Paddington and Emily Upjohn decided to take part, and we did favour Paddington, and it was a match. Paddington and Emily Upjohn won a great race throughout the final two furlongs. The best three-year-old colt in the world in our eyes, taking on probably the best four-year-old filly in the world as well. Absolutely brilliant. And it was won by Paddington. Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore just getting the better of John and Thady Gosden's filly, ridden by William Buick. The Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud was won by Westover, second in last year's derby, ridden by Robert Hornby and trained by Ralph Beckett. This week coming up, we've got the Newmarket July Festival. Horses to look out for: Princess of Wales Stakes, Adair, the Duchess of Cambridge Stakes, Star and Mystery, the Falmer Stakes, Via Sistina, and the July Cup, the big race on Saturday. Shaquille, Little Big Bear, or Kinross. Cricket, the Ashes are alive and back, with England taking a superb third test, despite it not going 4 days. England 1, Australia 2. England 237 all out. Australia were put into bat, made 263. Mitchell Marsh making his first appearance of the Ashes, coming in for the injured Cameron Green and scoring 118. Mark Wood, his first appearance of the Ashes, getting 5 for 34. England replied on 237. Ben Stokes, a brilliant 80, batting with the tail. Pat Cummins, the captain, 6 for 91, which left Australia 26 in front. They made 224 all out. Travis Head, 77. Stuart Broad and Chris Wokes, 3 wickets each. And England got there, 254 for 7. A brilliant 77 from Harry Brook, despite Mitchell Starc going 5 for 78. Two to play in the series. England 2-1 down. Can they win 3-2? In the women's Ashes, it's England 4 points, Australia 8. Australia won the Test match. England won the T20 series 2-1. And now they've got 3 one-day internationals, and England need to win all 3. Tennis and the Wimbledon singles. The men's, we still have 3 of our big guns in it. Novak Djokovic, Carlos Alcaraz and Jannik Sinner. And also in the women's, we have our 4 big guns. Iga Swiatek, Anya Sabalenka, Elena Rybakina and Ons Jabeur. Motorsport, MotoGP is back on the 6th of August with the British Grand Prix from Silverstone. And World Superbikes are back this weekend with the Italian round from Imola. British Superbikes held round 5 with races 13, 14 and 15 from Stettin using the 300 circuit. And it was a triple header by Tommy Bridewell for the Beer Monster Ducati. He won all 3 races. In the sprint race, Josh Brooks took second place in the FHO Racing BMW Motorrad, with Jason O'Halloran taking third in the McCams Yamaha. Race 2 saw Josh Brooks taking another second place, FHO Racing BMW, and a fellow BMW rider, Leon Haslam, in the Rokit BMW team, was third. And in race 3, Tommy Bridewell, as we said, won again, with his teammate this time, Glenn Irwin, in second, and Leon Haslam again taking third. The standings see Tommy Bridewell out in front for the Beer Monster Ducati. Glenn Irwin is second, his teammate, and Kyle Ride from the OMG Racing Yamaha team is third. They're back next on the 21st to the 23rd of July, with round 6 and races 16, 17, 18 from Brands Hatch using the GP circuit. Speedway GP is back this weekend with round 6 from Manila in Sweden. On to four wheels, and NASCAR held the Quaker State 400 presented by Walmart from Atlanta Motor Speedway. And it was back to the top again for William Byron, driving his Chevy Camaro for Hendrix Motorsport. It was Chevy's 1, 2 and 3, with Daniel Suarez taking second place for Trackhouse Racing and AJ Allmendinger third for Koolig Racing. This leaves the standings of William Byron now back out on top, Chevy Camaro of Hendrix Motorsport. Martin Truex Jr., who was the leader, is now second, driving his Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing. And third place, Kyle Busch, Chevy Camaro for Richard Childress Racing. This week, it's the Crayon 301 from New Hampshire Motor Speedway. IndyCar is back this weekend with the Honda Indy Toronto using the street circuit around Toronto. And Formula E is also back this weekend with rounds 13 and 14. From Rome with the Italian E-Prix. Formula 1 held the British Grand Prix from Silverstone, and yet again, unsurprisingly, it was won by the brilliant Max Verstappen. But he defeated 2 Brits. Lando Norris, a sparkling driver in his McLaren, was second, and Lewis Hamilton, after a poor start and down to 9th, battled through to finish 3rd. The standings see Max Verstappen way out in front now, 255 points, a full 99 clear of his teammate Sergio Perez, who again failed to make it out of Q1. With Fernando Alonso a further 19 back on 137. Well, Red Bull are dominating the constructors on 411, over 200 points ahead of Mercedes on 203, with Aston Martin a further 22 back on 181. They're back next on the 23rd of July with the Hungarian Grand Prix from the Hungaroring. We finish with football and a little preview for the Women's World Cup. The USA are favourites, and rightly so. They have long time had the best team around. England are obviously the Euro winners, still great despite losing a couple of veteran players, but they still got a really good team. And Spain, potentially the only team to have pushed England in the Euros. And they've got a great chance too. Germany and France are always there with fantastic teams. And you can't deny the chance of Australia. The host country, with the brilliant Sam Kerr up front, they've defeated England in pre-warm-up. It could be the USA, but we like Spain and England too. The men's under 21, congratulations to England, who won the under 21 championships recently under the guidance of Lee Carsley. They won it without conceding a goal. And James Trafford, the keeper from Manchester City, saved a penalty in the 98th minute of the final to deny Spain a goal, and England gained the victory. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, what another great show. I want to say thank you so much to everybody for listening. I want to say thank you to our guests, Molly Campbell, John Hathaway and Sam Hyatt, and to Johan, Rafaela and the whole team at UK Health Radio for giving us this great platform. We will see you all next week.